Okay, Gemara gets in Daf Nun Hayam and Beis. The famous Gemara, Amabirch Manach Siv Asher Yadam Mefachi Tamid. Happy is a person who is always afraid, Amach Shalifa Yipel Barah. A person who hardens his heart will fall, will stumble, Barah, with bad things will befall him. And then the Gemara says, Akam Tzabakam Tzachar Yerushalayim. Shalayim was destroyed because of a small issue between Kamcha and Bar Kamcha that resulted in the destruction of Shalayim. Tanagol of Tanagol Tachar of Turmalka. Because of a Tanagol and Tanagolas, Turmalka was destroyed. Asaka de Rispach Chor Beta. The Seir Beta was destroyed as a result of Saka de Rispach, which, as the Gemara explains later on, is a wall of a carriage which was taken from a tree. And the Gemara goes on later on to tell over the story that resulted in the destruction of Beta. Gemara has a few lines on the whole issue of Beit HaMikdash in the Mishnah, in the beginning of the fourth Perek in Tainis. It says, Chamisha Dvarim Eros Habaseinu B'Tisha B'Av. Five things happen on Tisha B'Av, which is why we fast on Tisha B'Av. B'Tisha B'Av Nigzah Habaseinu Shalikam Shularetz. It was a Gzera. The Gzera that B'nei Yisrael shouldn't go in the time of the Meraglim happened on Tisha B'Av. And the first place of Mikdash and the second place of Mikdash were destroyed on Tisha B'Av. V'nilkad Beit HaMikdash. And the city of Beit was captured, Venechash Ha'ir, and the city of Shalahim was plowed. So those are the five things. The Gemara in Tainis doesn't even mention a word, I should say one word. The Gemara says, look at the Beit, the Gemara says, Gemara. We have a Kabbalah that that happened in Tisha B'Av. But the Gemara doesn't go in to tell us anything about what it's all about and what this Churban Beit was. The Yerushalmi, on the other hand, in Maseches Tainis, does go into more details to talk about the destruction of Beit HaMikdash and the Bar Kokhba revolt. Now, the Bar Kokhba revolt is something that left its impression on Jewish history and on history in Bifrat. A name that was known to this very day, although from Jewish sources we know very little of what this was all about. But evidently it was something very powerful, as we shall see. And what's interesting is that the name Bar Kokhba is not even a Jewish concept. In other words, the name Bar Kokhba does not appear in any Jewish source whatsoever. The only place where it appears as Bar Kokhba is in Christian sources. In Jewish sources, he's always mentioned as Bar Kuziva. And we're going to try to solve that, time permitting, we'll try to solve that issue also to understand the difference between Bar Kokhba and Bar Kuziva, if any. The Gemara does mention over here, Dach Nizayin, Goda B'chori Av Kol Kain Yishal, Amar B'zayim O'Vav Amar B'yachonim. Elu Shemona Mel of Kainim M'chomash Nechatur Kach Beita. These are 80,000 Romans who went into the city of Beit when they captured, and they wiped out men, women, and children till the blood was flowing to the until the Yamagoda. And now the Gemara gives horrific descriptions of this tragedy of what happened in Beit Har. And later on, Hakol Kol Yaakov Adam Deis have also done the sign of the base. Hakol Zadrianus case has shown about the Sanders from time Shishim Riva Shishim Riva. That's how Adrian, who killed 600,000 on 600,000, double the amount of Yotam Mitzrayim. And Kol Yaakov, that's Pasianus case, Shargukach Beitar Abamis people. That's a Vespasian who killed in the city of Beitar 4 million people. Already the Maratzchayes and others point out that this should be Hadrian. Hadrian is the one who actually captured Beitar. Archaeology helped us understand a little more what this Bar Kokhba revolt is all about, and how it happened, what happened. Much of it, as I said, is still, we don't know, but archaeology and one history source, one foreign history source, we do have a non-Jewish history source, as a person by the name Cassius Dio, and he was a biographer of Hadrian, although he didn't live in his time. He wrote the biography later, but the stuff that he has, the numbers that he has, actually fit a lot with what we know. So, what do we know? Hadrian, the emperor, in the year 129, this already brings us to a problem with the year when it happened. Because in Geisha history, the events of the Bar Kokhba revolt take place between the years 132 and 135. Since the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed around the year 70, so that gives it 62 years after the Churban. On the other hand, Yerushalmi says that the thing of Beit that took place 52 years after the Churban. So this is one problem that we're still looking for answers on how to reconcile the two sources, but they are a problem. But according to what we know from Goyish sources, Hadrian, in the year 129, makes a trip to the Middle East and spends the summer in spends the winter of 129 in a city called Gerasa, and afterwards he makes his way to Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim in those days is ruins and had been destroyed. The Beis Hamikdash had been destroyed, as we said, the year 70, and the Jews had high hopes from Hadrian that he would permit him to rebuild the Beis Hamikdash. So when we're talking about the Jewish situation in Yerushalayim and in Israel as a whole, between the two revolts, the Great Revolt against the Romans, which resulted in the destruction of Beis Hamikdash, and the Bar Kokhba Revolt, the picture that emerges is like this. Those who had revolted against the Romans killed out, punished them severely. But there were Jews who surrendered to the Romans, and the Romans let them remain. And the area of Judea was heavily populated by Jews at the time, as was the Galil, as was the Abrahayad and the Transjordan. Also, it seems today, from the little archaeological evidence that we have access to, that it was heavily populated with Jews at the time. The Jews had high hopes that they could rebuild the Beis Hamikdash. So much so that the Medrash Rabbah in Parshas Toldos says that Hadrian at first let the Jews, he granted them permission to rebuild the Beis Hamikdash, and the preparations began to build the Beis Hamikdash. A lot of materials, etc., necessary, and the Jews got together these workers and started preparing for building the Beis Hamikdash. And then the Kusim, the Samaritans, intervened, and they told them that if you build the Beis Hamikdash, the Jews are going to revolt against them. Now, Samaritans live in the center of the country. At the time, they were a force to be reckoned with. The whole center of the country was Samaritan. And the big conflict between the Jews and the Samaritans / Kusim was the fact of Har Gerizim versus Yerushalayim, which is the Holy Mountain. The Samaritans accepted Har Gerizim as the Holy Mountain. They originally built the Beis HaMikdash there. And the Hashmonaim destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and actually they were not happy with that, and they made every effort to make sure that the Jews are not going to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. The Samaritans, as we see later on, also played a role in the ultimate defeat of Bar Kokhba. So the Samaritans told Hadrian, they said, if you let him build the Beis HaMikdash, then forget it. Then you're going to be in a lot of trouble. The Jews are going to revolt. So when Hadrian heard that, he says, what could I do? I promised them already. So they told him, look, yeah, don't go back on your promise. But your son, you want to build a bigger fire, almost a bigger one. You want to build it smaller. And then the Jews on their own will already back off from the idea. So he did that, and the Jews were actually upset. They wanted to revolt against the Romans. And Moshe ben Hananiah, not some sense into them that they're better off, you know, without a Beis HaMikdash, not revolting, than revolting and suffering the consequences. In the end, what Hadrian did to Yerushalayim was he made it into a pagan city. He wanted to make sure the Beis HaMikdash is not going to be rebuilt, so he made it into a pagan city. He changed the name from Yerushalayim to Aelia Capitolina. Aelia is Hadrian's name. He had a long name, as all Roman emperors did, and his name was Aelius Hadrianus, etc., among other names. So Aelius, his name, and Capitolina were the names of the gods, Jupiter, and whatever, that he built them a pagan temple in Yerushalayim. And he even in establishing the city, What we see over here is a statue. This is a replica, a bronze statue of Hadrian, which was actually found near Beit Shahan and up north. And this is a rare example of a bronze statue found, the life size, you can say, pretty much, a statue of Hadrian. It's believed that this statue was brought from Rome to Eretz Israel for Hadrian's visit, which we mentioned here, 129-130, or perhaps it was brought as a victory statue after Hadrian crossed the Bar Kokhba River. Either way, this statue was found, as I said, near Beit Shan, the kibbutz Tirat Tzvi, Ein HaNativ, and this is a replica currently found today in the Migdal David Museum in Yerushalayim. What did Hadrian actually see in Yerushalayim? Well, you see over here in the Holy Land of Tel Mar, you see three towers. And these are the three towers by Migdal David today. And according to Josephus, the historian who documented the story of the Churban Beis HaMikdash, when Titus destroyed the Yerushalayim with the Beis HaMikdash around the year 70, the only thing he left were these three towers. This is remains of one of those towers standing today in the middle of the Dublin Museum. These are the symbols, the emblems of the Roman Legion. Of course, these are replicas. On the left, you see the Nesher, which represents Rome, and on the right, a wild boar. In the middle, a sign that says Legion X, which is the 10th Legion, the Legion that destroyed the Beis HaMikdash and remained in Yerushalayim for the next 300 years. Okay, what they were busy doing is not important for us. Are there any remains of Hadrian in Yerushalayim? So in one of the stones by the southern wall of Har Bayis, there's this stone over here, which you can see the top left is the way it is today, but it's upside down, so I reversed it and see it on the bottom left. And on the right you see the inscription. It says Tito Hadriano Antoninus, etc. So many thought at first that this is a statue of this is a stone that mentions Hadrian, but this is actually mentioning Antoninus Pius, the Hadrian's successor. Now, the Roman emperors, when they had their names, they had, as I said, a whole list of names. So Antoninus Pius also had his name Hadrian. This thing usually meant the godly or great or stuff like that. So this is actually not mentioning Hadrian, but it's mentioning his successor. Nonetheless, this is found in a wall by the Har Bayis, and that probably means that there was a statue of the emperor on Har Bayis. We know very little of what took place on Har Bayis from the time of the destruction until the Muslim period in the 8th century. Today, it seems we know a little more. There probably was a Byzantine church on Har Bayis, and earlier there were statues of the Roman emperors, as we see this stone over here. This is the site of the Churban, the Har Bayis, the way it is today, the way it was. Obviously, this building in the center wasn't there in those days, but this is the image of where the Beis HaMikdash stood, and later on, the Muslims built the Dome of the Rock in the place of Kosher Kedusha. One second. I'm looking. We mentioned that it says in Mishnah Tainus, Nechash Ha'ir, the city was plowed. This is a very interesting coin, which can be seen over here on the left, is the image of Hadrian, and on the right, Hadrian is seen with a pair of oxen plowing around the city called Aelia Capitolina. If we go to see the sketch a little better, this is how the design looks. It says on it, Capitolina. You see Hadrian with a pair of oxen. Now, this was common custom in the Roman world. When they established a new city, they would plow around the outskirts of the city. Many suggest that this represents the Nechash Ha'ir that we're talking about. That also happened on Tisha B'Av, is this thing of Hadrian establishing establishing the new city. As we shall see, it's not necessarily so. What's interesting is that the Mishnah gives the order the way things went, and first was Nefta Beta, and then was Nechashayi. So now the plowing of the city took place after Beta was captured. So indeed there was some plowing of the city before, but probably more ceremonious, and after the Rakoch revolt was crushed, so then the Romans actually set out to do what they had originally planned and make Yerushalayim into a pagan city. Adrian not only declared a pagan city, but also brought non-Jewish population. This was one of the things that prompted the revolt against the Romans. Another issue which is commonly raised, though the not clear, again, the Gzeirah Shmad of Hadrian. He made a Gzeirah against Bris Milah, he made a Gzeirah against other things, well, probably those are referred to in Maseches Tumet, and the Gzeirahs which later on Rabbi Gamliel went to annul. But it's not, again, these things are not clear which resulted in which. Did these start off because that the Jews revolted, or because the Jews revolted, Hadrian made these Gzeirahs? But anyway, the Gzeirah was known as the Gzeirah Shmad of Hadrian, so lead to the Bar Kokhba revolt. When we talk about the Bar Kokhba revolt in Chazal, all we have, mostly what we have, is the sources of the Yerushalmi and Tainus. And Yerushalmi and Tainus says like this. Tanya Rav Shimon Yochai, Akiva Yadorash, Rabbi Akiva was Dorash. Rabbi Akiva Yadorash. Dorach Kokhba Miyakov, Dorach Kuzba Miyakov. And the pasuk says the star shall get up from Yaakov, and Machatz Pasemor v'Karkar Kol Bnei Sheks in Parshas Balak with the story with Bilah. It says the star will get up and crush all the enemies. Darach Koch from Yaakov. He says, who is this Darach Koz from Yaakov? It's referring to Bar Kozba. Bar Kozba, Bar Koziva is the only way that he appears mentioned in Chazal. Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Chani Bar Kozba, Aviyam Medeinu Malka Mashiach. When Rabbi Kiva would see Bar Kozba, / Bar Kochba, he would say, this is the Mashiach. Omla Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zarsa. Akiva, Yalo Asabim Bilcha Yechov Adayin Ben David Leyevo. Akiva, grass will grow on your cheeks, and nonetheless, the Ben David has not come. So as Rabbi Kiva felt that Bar Kochba was Mashiach, and Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zarsa argued. Very interesting, in the Rambam, where the Rambam goes into details, when the Rambam gives an example of what the Mashiach is supposed to be like, so the Rambam brings Pesukim to show, because the coming of Mashiach is not written directly in the Chumash, it's written in the Nevi'im, as the Rambam says, in the Chumash, there's a lot of things alluding to it, and one of them is, again, this Pesuk, V'dach Kocha Miyakov, that Mashiach is coming. Then the Rambam goes on and says like this, Va'al yala datcha, Rambam in Hilchos Melachim Perek Yid Aleph Halachavu. Va'al yala adayin chosha melech ha-Mashiach tzorech l'asav salos ha-samofsi. Don't think that the Mashiach has got to prove himself with miracles. Why? U'mechadesh dvarim b'olam, he makes new things. U'mechayim meisim. Or he does tchias ha-meisim. U'kayos b'dvarim elu sh'atip shimom. Ein adover ke. The Rambam says, don't think that Mashiach has to prove himself with miracles. That's not the case. Rabbi Kiva Chacham Godol Hoya Mechachma Mishnah Hoya. Rabbi Kiva was a great Chacham from the Chacham and the Mishnah. Goya Nosekelim Shem Kozba HaMelech. And he was the one who was Nosekelim. He was like assistant. He was a backer of Ben Koziva. Vohu Haya Omer Olav Shu Melech HaMashiach. And he said on Bar Kozba his Mashiach, V'dimahu V'chol Chachmei Doro Shu Melech HaMashiach. That's an Erech Bavonos. And him, and the Rambam says, and all Chachmei Doro. And I was in Sham, we have a focus, Rabbi Kiva versus Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zarsa. So it seems like a one on one. They say Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zarsa is not on the level of Rabbi Kiva. But the Rambam learns it now like this. So Rabbi Kiva and everyone versus what? So everyone said that he's Mashiach, Achenag Ravonos, until he was killed. Kim Shaner, Gnelda Shena Mashiach. Velo Shalomenu Chachamim Lohos Velo Mofos. Chachamim did not ask him for a proof, a miracle. So if Mashiach has got to prove himself with certain things, so then they should have asked him for those proofs. And if he didn't have the proofs, they would have known that he's not Mashiach. Now for this, the Rabbi right away points out that this is indeed what it says in the Yerushalmi. But in the Bavli, it does say differently. In the Gemara Chelek, it says that they asked him for one of these signs, and when he didn't have one of these signs, they realized that he's not a real Mashiach, and they killed him. But anyway, but that's the this is the Rambam's opinion. And the Rambam goes on to explain, and it really, you don't have the time to go on to explain the entire pshat in this parak in the Rambam, which a lot of it has been censored. and recently republished in the Frankel Rambam. And if one really wants to understand what the Rambam is getting at, you have to see the whole thing, including the censored portion. Otherwise, the Rambam doesn't seem to make any sense. But the key Rambam. The Rambam says, "V'm yamud melechem reis David." If a king gets up from the family of David, hoga b'torah v'osik b'mitzvos k'David David, studying Torah and osik mitzvos like his father, like David Hamelch, and he'll force all Yisrael, Klal Yisrael, to follow the Torah, and he'll be victorious in the wars. Hareza b'cheskas shu Mashiach. So then you have a chazaka that this person is Mashiach. Emosa b'tzliach. If he was successful in his campaign, and he was victorious over all the enemies around, and he built the Beis HaMikdash where it's supposed to be, and he gathered all of Klal Yisrael scattered, so then he's definitely Mashiach. The Rambam says you have Cheskas Mashiach and you have Mashiach Vada. Let's say Cheskas Mashiach is, let's just throw a figure, 85%. He's done 85% of what is Mashiach, but then there's a second stage, and then we're going to Mashiach Vada. And now the censor took out this next halach in the Rambam. And if he wasn't successful, oh, Neharag, where he's killed, so then you know that he wasn't Mashiach. So he was a kosher king. Nothing made him a Mashiach Sheker. He didn't declare himself Mashiach. He was a kosher king. He passed 85% of the test, but he didn't get to the ultimate 100%, so he's not complete Mashiach. And the Rambam is going on to explain the difference between our Mashiach and what the Christians believe in Mashiach and what the Muslims believe in Mashiach. And the key the Rambam says is that the Torah is eternal, and if anyone gets up and tries to change anything from the Torah, then he's not Mashiach. So, which again, the Rambam is clearly talking against the Christian Mashiach and the Muslim Mashiach. In essence, what the Rambam is saying, like this. Now, with this, I'll tell a quick story. Rav Chaim Briska was once on a train with a Talmidim, and they bumped into a Christian missionary. And the Christian missionary started debating and telling him that Yashka is Mashiach. So the Talmidim said, impossible, give him a whole bunch of reasons why he can't be Mashiach. The guy's dead, whatever, he cannot be Mashiach. So the missionary said, he says, look, you know, you guys can be making a mistake also. Even Rabbi Kiva made a mistake. Rabbi Kiva thought that Rakach was Mashiach. And it turns out that he was wrong. So you guys are making mistakes. How can you be so sure you're not making a mistake now? So he said that, Talmid didn't know what to answer. So Chaim turned to him and said, and how do you know that indeed Bar Kocha was not Mashiach? The answer is because he was killed. So in essence, a person who was killed cannot be Mashiach. So there's your answer. You know, for your Messiah also. In essence, what the Rambam is trying to say, if I understand correctly, is like this. It says you have a person who reaches 85% Mashiach, that's Cheskas Mashiach. And then you have a person Mashiach Bada. And if the person does 85%, then you have to start thinking that this guy could be potentially Mashiach. Before that, don't even bother, he hasn't done anything to prove that he's on track to be Mashiach. So, the Rambam in essence is saying is that this is what Rabbi Kiva and all Chachmei Doro saw in Bar Kochba. That was, he did these 85%. Now, he didn't make it to the final 15%. He wasn't Mekabet in Chayisra. He didn't build Beis HaMikdash. He didn't defeat the enemies. So therefore, he was a kosher king. He was a Machisar Cherim. But he was not Mashiach. That's in essence what the Rambam is saying. So this, one of the questions, one of the issues that's always raised is, did Bar Kochba capture Yerushalayim or not? How far did it extend? The Rashash, for example, in the beginning of the 7th Perek of Sachem, and there are other places where it seems to be implying that there was a Korban Pesach after the Korban Beis HaMikdash. So in the beginning of the 7th Perek of Sachem, says Rav Gamliel used to roast the Pesach al Askel. He roasted it on a metal grate. So the question is, when was there a Korban Pesach at the time of Rav Gamliel? So the Rashash says, according to some historians, Bar Kochba captured Yerushalayim, so it could be that then they were mark of Korban Pesach. If we look at some of the coins that Bar Kochba minted, um, We take a look over here, we look at the coins that Bar Kokhba minted, we look at the bottom right, this coin is believed to be showing the facade of the Beis HaMikdash. And you see that in the top middle coin also. They were minted on top of Roman coins. You see the one on the right side, and this is a coin showing the facade of Beis HaMikdash. Very interestingly, on the left you see a lulav and esrog. So briefly, we'll say the idea of Yaakov Mesharer. This lulav and esrog, this lulav has one adas and one arava only, and that is the opinion of Rabbi Kiva in the Gemara in Sukkah. Unlike our custom today that we pass in that you need three adas and two aravas, Rabbi Kiva holds you need only one adas and one arava, and Bar Kokhba was following Rabbi Kiva, therefore his coins only show one adas and one arava. Okay, so this is showing the facade of the Beis HaMikdash. Interestingly, you see the coin machnaisa now on the left. On the right, you see a model of the Beis HaMikdash in the Kotel tunnels done by Zalman Kohen Shlita, in which he used the coin, the Bar Kokhba coin, as inspiration of how to depict the facade in this model. And you see over here four pillars and a doorway, and some want to suggest even that not only that Bar Kokhba captured Yerushalayim, but Bar Kokhba even built a Beis HaMikdash that was later destroyed. Again, as we see clearly from the Rambam knows clearly, no, Bar Kokhba did not pass his test of building a Beis HaMikdash. There's no source whatsoever that there was a third structure of Beis HaMikdash. All the proofs that have been brought have been refuted. That's not a thing. If we look at the coins also, and take a look at this coin, another coin over here, you see the coins are showing musical instruments on the Beis HaMikdash, the Chatzotos on the right and the navel on the left. So the idea of the Beis HaMikdash appears numerous times in Bar Kokhba motifs. In some places it says he mentions the Gulat Yisrael, some places it mentions the Gulat Yerushalayim. Someone did say that means that at first he did capture Yerushalayim and later he lost it. It turns out that there is no consistency in the years of the Bar Kokhba revolt. One says this, one says that, and thus it doesn't prove anything. The coins are the things that are basically wherever they're found. We know that that's where the Bar Kokhba revolt took place. In Yerushalayim, from 600,000 coins which have been discovered scientifically, maybe one coin is a Bar Kokhba coin. As Yaakov Mesharer told me, one Bar Kokhba coin was also found in England. So you don't think that that participated in the revolt. One coin can wander from place to place, but as a whole, there are no Bar Kokhba coins in Yerushalayim, and therefore it's pretty clear from archaeological evidence backing, as we said, what we see from the Rambam, that that Bar Kokhba did not capture Yerushalayim. The end result of the revolt, in the end, it all boiled down to a city called Beitar, as we saw from the Gemara here, and the end result was that Beitar, Hadrian had to bring half of the Roman army here to Eretz Yisrael in order to crush this revolt. According to one of the modern historians, this was the most difficult test that the entire Roman Empire ever faced. That was the make it or break it was going to be this Bar Kokhba revolt. The numbers of the people killed over here are staggering. Cassius Dio talks about 580,000 people. The Gemara, the Yerushalmi in Tainus says that Bar Kokhba had 400,000 soldiers in his army, so therefore the number of Cassius Dio is not out of the ballpark. It could be a very realistic number. 1,000 villages are destroyed. The entire area of Judea is emptied out of its Jewish population. The name is no longer called Judea. It's called Palestine, based on Herodotus. The name changed, also something unprecedented in any Roman history. Again, some say this change already took place before, but the general consensus among historians is that this is a result of the fact that all of Judea emptied out of Jewish population. The Sanhedrin, which was in Yavne, moved up to Usha in the Galil. They returned to Yavne for a brief time, probably in the time when the Romans let the Jews bury the dead. It says when they let the Jews bury the dead, they were massacred in Yavne, the Bracha Batova Meti. So we see they did come back to Yavne sometime after the Bar Kokhba revolt, perhaps for a brief stint. That's where they made the Bracha Batova Meti. The only place where Jews remained is in the area called Daroma, which is the southern part of Judea. Places like Susia, Maon, Carmel, over there, shuls were found in the Byzantine period. But in the rest of Judea, no shuls were found. Judea emptied out of Jewish population until modern times. Until today, the whole Judea was pretty much empty of Jewish population, more or less. It was like Gaza, little Jewish population, but other than that, it was pretty much empty. Some, of course, made it to Yerushalayim, but as a whole, it was empty, and the results were catastrophic. He put up a good fight. We know today, we spoke about his name. His name appears in documents which are found in Nachal Chever. Nachal Chever finds require a whole study in itself. They found over the strings which actually can be the real Tcheles. After reviewing the research, I'm convinced they are the real Tcheles. However, science has been unable to take the finds and analyze where it came from, what the Chilazin was. But I'm convinced it's definitely the real Tcheles because of the evidence over there shows that this was dyed special. It wasn't just a typical indigo dye. But the documents over there have the name of Shimon Bar Kusiva with a Samach. So Yigal Yadin, who discovered these documents, came up with this idea that his real name was Bar Kusiva. He came from a place, Kusiva. And there was a play on words. Those who believed that he was Mashiach, the Rach Kochav Miyakov, named him Bar Kochav. Those who believed that he is false called him Bar Kusiva as an illusion of Chazav of a lie. That's his idea. This idea has been accepted pretty much without any, without, as far as I know, without any, no one arguing on this idea, but I'm here to suggest a new idea, and I don't think Yadin is right. No, he's right. He found the documents. His name was Bar Kusiva. In the Gemara, in Gittin, we have a person called Bar Daroma. Now, Bar Daroma obviously doesn't mean his father was, his name was Darom. It could be his father came from the south, or he came from the south. So to have a person's name, and by the way, his name is Shimon, as appears on the coins, he was a king. His title on the coins is Nasi Yisrael, his title on the documents. So he was a king, as the Rambam describes him. Kusiva could mean the name of a place, not necessarily his father. And especially that he's referred to always by this name and not by his first name can show that he was known that, like, people's last name today are from towns in Europe where they originally came from. Now, in Yerushalmi, Rabbi Kiva is the one in Darach Kochav Miyakov. He's Darach Kozva Miyakov. So Rabbi Kiva believes his Mashiach uses the term Kozva. So probably what we have over here is that he came from the town called Kiziv, and there's a Kiziv in Judea, and in Aramaic, the Zion switched to Samach. Now, I was fortunate, I wanted to ask this question to one of the top linguistic experts today in Eretz Yisrael by the name of Shalom Kor, and Dr. Avshalom Kor, and a few weeks ago I bumped into him by Chasson right outside Marasa Machpela, and as I was running through I proposed him this idea. He didn't like my idea, but that's not what I asked him. I asked him linguistically, it could be that a Zion switched to a Samach, and he says yes, such a phenomenon does definitely happen, and that's possible. So now his real name is Bar Kusiva because he came from a town called Kuziv, similar to Bar Daroma, and in Aramaic, which the documents that were found were written in Aramaic, is Bar Kusiva, it's the same thing, and Bar Kochva is a title that was actually given to him, believing that he was Mashiach.